We two practice, he will translate. Kaida.
What is Kaida?
Kaida or Kaida?
Kaida.
Kaida.
Al-Qaida.
Kaid al-Kuffar.
Al-Qaida means the ground.
Al-Hayawana.
Repeat these words. Repeat these words. Alayhi.
Alayhi means on him.
Li'ila fi Quraysh.
Li'ila fi Quraysh.
Thank you so much. Alhamdulillah, we learned Alif Maddi, Waw Maddi, Yai Maddi, and also Dagger Alif, Maqsura Alif, and Ya Lin, which or Lin Ya. Yes? So inshallah, next session we will go and study something new. But before that, let's thank all the students, all the friends who are here, and also Xavier International School, and also IRIB.
IRIB.
Not I. May Allah Almighty help us, okay, again.
IRIB.
Inshallah, to hold these sessions, let's recite a salawat.
IRIB.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil faradahu.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us again on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. In the studio with me, of course, I have the privilege and honor of being joined with my darling sister and excellent expert, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam, my lovely sister Zainab.
Sister Razia, you drew out the image of a bewildered woman who is stuck at a crossroads, does not know what to do with the double
standards,
value systems that have been presented to her. On one hand, Islam says a bunch of things a woman should be, and the other hand, the secular society that she could be living in is expecting another bunch of things from her.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't know what to do. The solution, as you were saying this, I said in the previous show, I don't know if our listeners remember, that I don't understand what the confusion is. Why would you be confused? Just pick a side.
prioritize.
Exactly.
And that's when you gave the solution, which is just choose one value system.
Pick a side and prioritize are two different things.
How?
Pick a side, it means you choose one value system. So in the Islamic value system, your financial needs are taken care of by the men. Either your father, your husband. The men are fundamentally are supposed to take care of your financial needs.
Mm-hmm.
In the secular system, you have to yourself take care of your financial needs. You mm-hmm. are brought up in a way to be able to be independent enough to take care of your financial needs. In the Islamic system, you are supposed to have less stress. Your needs, your financial needs are taken care of. Why? Not that you would sleep longer and just, you know, chit-chat and, you know, have fun. So that it would give you more room
for
peace of mind.
To do what?
To take care of a family.
When?
Whenever it's time for you to get married.
You're borderline spinster. You still live at your father's house. You do not have a career. You wake up every morning without any life purpose. You sit around for
you're
that...
You're a depressed lady. I would say you would have to go see a psychologist, number one. And two, you see in what kind of house this girl is brought up. And
any
what
house.
Kind of community she lives.
Any house.
And what were the priorities of herself and her parents.
What is her parents' job to do for a 28-year-old, 32-year-old daughter that they have, unmarried, at home, labeled as a spinster, old maid, as the word goes. She doesn't have a career because her daddy takes care of her financial needs.
Where is she living, this girl? I haven't seen such girls. Where in the world is she living?
She lives in Saudi Arabia. She lives in Pakistan. She
I don't think a girl in
Malaysia.
Saudi Arabia would live to be 32 and single.
No, there are a lot.
No, honey. There they have like bunch of like they have polygamy. I don't know about the statistics. If you want to be clear and if you want to talk scientifically, I think we have to go refer to statistics.
No, I'm saying that the image that you're
if
drawing
you're talking about
from
the
me
West,
right now, the image that you're drawing from me right now, a girl who's financial needs are taken care of either by her husband or her father so that she could be at peace.
You have
this
the,
is the
ostrich picture in your mind. You have the ostrich, exactly.
Elaborate.
So first let me make the picture a little more clear
sure.
and then we can talk
yeah.
about it. So your needs are supposed to be taken care of
mm-hmm.
so that you would have this peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, this is the question of the millennium.
Mm-hmm.
Of the century, more precisely to talk.
We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Thank you again for joining us. We've been talking about some really interesting stuff.
Sociologists, experts in the field of women and family studies are actually talking, they're discussing this. This is a big question that they have, that what is to become of a woman, of a Muslim woman? We're talking about women. So I'm just a researcher in this field. I don't claim that I know the answers to all questions. I'm just saying things based on my studies and based on my personal
for sure,
experience,
for sure.
Right? When I see the situation of girls, of us girls, young, prosperous, educated, having a good career girls, a lot of us, we seem to be enjoying a lot of good things
mm-hmm.
from life these days, but then we're lacking so many other things, fundamental things that I think our religion mm-hmm. has had it in its potential, but because we have driven away from that nuclear path, from that important path that we were supposed to follow, we're missing on those things.
Yeah.
For example, depression, being single, for I don't know how long you have to be.
Okay.
These are pains.
Seriously?
These are pains,
depression,
yes.
I agree, but being single, I don't
for
see
you,
how
it's not a
problem.
Pain, but go ask so many girls who are in their 30s, in their 40s.
Why are they still single, though?
Because they were following their careers, because they wanted to go after education. They became so qualified. They were
overqualified.
And no man would suit them.
Too
bad, you're going to be depressed. Well, find you're going to be single. You're going to have the dream of having a child until you die. These are pains.
You can solve that with the help of a psychiatrist. I don't understand why
a psychologist would give you a husband and child.
No, they will help you with your depression. But I don't understand.
And then after you get healed,
why do I have to lower my standards so that a man could catch up with me?
You remember last session I said that we're giving too much importance to women and women empowerment, and we have left men behind? All these past decades of feminism, women power, whatever, blah, 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 you have given women endlessly, continuously given, pushing women forward to the brinks of success and to the thresholds of, you know,
technology. Progression.
Exactly. And men have been left behind.
How is that my problem?
Because the education system, I don't know what you call it, the worldview of people, the doctrines, the prevalent doctrines of the last couple of decades, unfortunately have led the human society, in specific societies, in many societies, in a way, in a direction that the men and women haven't been brought up in a balanced way. So they don't know what is expected of them. They're confused.
And what's the Islam solution to this?
I was drawing a clear line between the Islamic system and the secular system. I said that if you're looking at the solution to this problem is, as you said, in the beginning of our program, you said you either have to choose one of these values or prioritize.
No, I meant by this, I meant the same thing. If your priority is your hereafter, Sister Rozia, and you find that the secular value system is hindering you, is obscuring your path towards this ultimate felicity and salvation of this world and the next, then you're going to pick a side and you choose the Islamic value system. If your priority is success in this world...
This is a very good abstract sentence in a book.
That's why I don't understand.
But then when you come to life, there are so many variables that would make you shift.
And a woman who has been raised in an Islamic household, we're talking about semi-ideal here. She was raised in an Islamic household. Her father and her mother were good, pious, non-abusive, non-absent, really supportive Muslim parents.
Okay.
And she was raised to understand the values of her religion and the do's and the don'ts, the boundaries, the limitations, and the empowering teachings of it, right? Mm-hmm. She really has developed the sense of spiritual growth and really feels that her priority in life is God's satisfaction and my salvation in the hereafter.
So what is she going to do now with this God's salvation and whatever?
She lives her life in order to attain that objective, right?
How?
In any way she can.
And then whether she has to get married at a young age, she has some suitors?
She has some suitors. She finds someone suitable. She gets married at a young age and she has children. And maybe when her children have grown up, she goes back to college. She does something to keep herself productive and contributing to society. The opportunity doesn't present herself. Doesn't mean she has to sit at home and turn herself into pickle. She can still go do stuff until the opportunity presents itself.
I do agree with you.
Once it does, she compromises and she gravitates towards that which she has prioritized.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
So that's what I meant by I don't get the confusion.
There is no confusion here.
Okay, good.
Because when you were talking about prioritizing, first of all, you said that she's brought up in a family where she is totally...
She's got her values straight.
And she knows what the roles that she's going to lead in. And she gets married at a young age.
If the opportunity presents
itself. This is the part
itself.
That we didn't agree in the beginning.
If the opportunity presents itself.
The opportunity, well, it's really defining how the opportunity is and how you define suitability of the suitor. Mm. This is the area that where we could have some challenges.
And it's like sort of personal too. We're just going to have to ask the girl herself.
But then you said she's going to get married, she's going to have children, and then she's going to wait until they grow up, and then she continues her education.
Do whatever it is that she wants to do.
I think this is the Islamic.
Yeah, okay.
This is what Islam wants from you.
Oh, I'm so happy we've come
to an understanding. Problem solved.
Then on the other hand, I've seen a lot of women who grew up with absent fathers, absent mothers, who lost their father at a young age, and that caretaker was no longer available to them to no fault of their own. Mm-hmm. They had to grow up working. They grew up watching their moms mm-hmm. working double shifts, triple shifts. They had to get good grades in college so that they could land a good career and support themselves. And naturally, they would be a tad bit traumatized along the way, not having that father figure to turn to during times of turmoil.
Did they get married?
Some of them did.
Are they happy?
They're happy. They have good... And you know, at the end of the day, everything is rizq. I do believe that. It's a provision. Allah wants to bless someone with a good husband or a good wife. Congratulations. Allah wants to test them with an awful wife or husband.
Rizq is something that is constantly showering everyone. But you're a bowl. You put it upside down. Mm. It doesn't receive any rizq.
Yeah, but then Allah, you know, He has a way of testing people.
He tests you with your shortcomings.
Oh, of course.
With your
Otherwise,
weaknesses.
Otherwise, there won't be any growth.
Exactly. This is what... this rizq was always there.
Mm. It doesn't necessarily...
You have to create the potential, the capacity in yourself to receive the rizq.
Everyone deserves a good spouse. Well, yes, but sometimes everyone gets tested. Live it out. You live, you learn. You know what I mean?
There were so many other reasons why.
Exactly. I'm saying
God
that
God wanted to maybe test the other people. They mm-hmm. wanted to test maybe that woman who married. Or there were so many other
factors
that He wanted to, like, one specific rule or understanding or information for the society, you know, to know it. So these things happen so that because of history, because of the Islamic history, so
yes.
that a specific Islamic rule or a specific Islamic understanding or precept or concept would be understood.
In any case, this is a tricky topic, and I'm glad we came to an understanding of what are the solutions Islam presents for a woman who wishes to live in an Islamic way, right?
But then, I think we still generalize so many things, and that's why we came to a conclusion. We didn't talk about the challenge.
We'll get into more details, yeah. inshallah, in future episodes of this show, so make sure to tune in. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammad Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity.
La ilaha illallah.
Muhammadur Rasulullah.
La ilaha illallah.
Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female, and made us into nations and tribes, so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Yani?
Yeah.
Bazaar. Iranian leather production dates back thousands of years. In fact, Iran is one of the oldest leather producers in the world. Ancient artifacts show Iranians were using leather to make shoes, clothes, and weapons at the height of the Bronze Age in the 15th century BC. Historically, Iranian leather was always a welcomed import because of its high quality and the country's strategic location along the Silk Road. The leather production legacy continues to this day, but it looks a lot different with the evolution of technology and industry.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Adema. This week, we will take a close look at the leather industry while shining the spotlight on shoe productions. We wanted to see how much leather is produced in Iran and what some of its major uses are. We will also check out some of the contributions of this industry to Iran's national economy. So, let's get started.
To become more familiar with the leather industry, we visited Adura, which is a company that specializes in making leather footwear for women. This company has been around for 2 decades. Its production hall is enormous, and it all starts with the raw material. First, leather material is sorted based on quality grades. Then, patterns are cut. The pieces are then sent to a section devoted to making the shoe uppers. The preparation room is where the pieces are stamped with markers and eyelets are punched. From here, leather parts are taken to a completely mechanized montage division. After the upper part of the shoe is stitched, the insoles are assembled onto the shoe and sent to the finishing room. At this stage, shoes are polished, decorated, and as the name implies, the finishing touches are added, preparing them for packaging and distribution. This company carries out quality control checks on all stages of production. They use highest-grade leather produced in the country and chose material that follows international grading processes. Following international guidelines also helps them on the path of exports. Some time ago, it overhauled its production unit and mechanized many processes to maintain consistent high quality. And one way to do this is by automating repetitive processes.
Now, not every shoe manufacturer is the same. Some shoes can be created in hundreds of steps, but don't worry, we won't take you through all of them. On another note, it's important for manufacturers to produce products along international standards. This, in the long run, helps producers stay up to date with regulations, allowing them to export their items easily when they are able to.
Maintaining quality is key in staying relevant in any market for the shoe industry, and it is no different. Shoe production has its own specific standards. And most of the quality comes from the material used and the way shoes are crafted with attention to flawlessly executing details. This company adheres to strict standards set by Iran's Bureau of Standards as well as international criteria for productions. Plus, it has received its operation licenses from the Ministry of Industry and other affiliated organizations. It might be interesting to know that this company has previously indirectly exported its products, meaning clothing and apparel companies would purchase from this brand and sell these items along with their own products to customers abroad. This manufacturer has an eye on the future and is already expanding its production facilities. They hope to launch a second production unit in the near future, which will incorporate men's footwear as well. But that's not all. They also have plans to further develop and expand the industry as a whole.
Its unique philosophy regarding the U.S.-imposed sanctions has been a driving force behind its massive productions. They viewed sanctions as a blessing in disguise that helps strengthen production in this field. In general, Iran's leather is a high potential market because of its soaring added value profits. For example, the export of one leather jacket is 5 times more profitable than a single barrel of oil. Iran is among the top 3 leather producers and exporters of semi-finished products. Plus, the country is globally ranked 3rd in terms of quantity and quality of leather produced. Global leather experts consider Iranian sheepskin as the best leather in the world. They say this leather is easier to process and has less odor. Some of the finest sheep leather comes from the Mogan Plain and its surrounding regions. Additionally, the best cow and goat leather belongs to areas in Iran with dry climates. This is because there are fewer diseases and animals suffering fewer environmental scratches. Those who have the potential for animal husbandry have also turned their gaze towards leather production. This is true for the nomadic communities in the country as well. Skins and hides from livestock used for food production are used in the leather industry too. There are some 230 active leather producing units that employ well over 3,800 people. That's according to the Leather Industries Association in Iran. Some of the most famous provinces for leather production include East Azerbaijan, Tehran, Khorasan, and Hamadan, among others. Most of the leather companies belong to the private sector. Many of these factories are working at only 40% of their total production capacities despite high levels of investment in the domestic industry. This is partly because of the limitations in infrastructure, technical facilities, and modern technology. Domestic leather production has come a long way from traditional production methods. Right now, most of Iran's leather exports are in the form of raw materials, but exports of other leather products, such as shoes and clothing, are also on the rise. Nevertheless, industry participants are grappling with some major obstacle which has drawn the attention of the government. Surprisingly, 80% of Iran's sheepskin and 20% of goatskin are exported to Italy, Turkey, and Russia, just to name a few. Iran is well known in the international raw material market, but because of its shy presence of finished products, exported materials often return to Iran at exorbitant prices. The problem is that the production chain is not complete. Part of the chain, including shoe soles and other accessories, is not produced domestically on a large scale. This has led to costly imports of items that can be potentially manufactured locally. In recent years, the government has taken steps towards supporting domestic manufacturers. One such program is to offer financial assistance to companies in need of capital. Also, a few years back, manufacturers were competing with smuggled goods. In order to increase market regulation and stabilize conditions for healthy competition, the government implemented a campaign against illicit imports and contraband. All things considered, some 120 million cubic meters of light leather and over 230 million cubic meters of heavy leather were produced in the country last year. That's according to Iran's Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. The majority of leather used in the industry is supplied domestically, which is complemented by a small amount of imports. The leather industry has so much untapped potential and promises a bright future. There are numerous opportunities for investment in this field, particularly in technology and production machinery, as well as packaging, distribution, and branding.
The medical device industry is the second most profitable global commercial enterprise. This is followed by oil, gas, and petrochemical sectors. Iran's healthcare system is far more modern than many might expect. From family planning to organ transplants and cosmetic surgery, the medical sector is progressive and advanced. Considered a high-tech industry, the medical device field is heavily regulated.
with large investments going towards R&D activities. A lot happens behind the scenes before medical treatments reach a patient. This time, we will venture through Iran's medical device industry while giving center stage to advanced laboratory technology. We'll take a look at some of the major players in this field, plus check out why this technology is important to the health sector. Moreover, we will uncover the contributions of this industry to the national economy. Our journey took us to a knowledge-based company that specializes in producing high-tech medical lab equipment and instruments. Noyan Negin Parsian was first established in 2006 with the goal of improving the quality of medical diagnosis and scientific advancement in labs. The ultimate objective is to improve the health of the patients.
I remember back then, since the 2007, it was around 14 years ago, the technology was not so fast in this area. So we have to seek for opportunities in order to work with the good brands. And from that time, our aim was to introduce the technologies that works in regarding a better diagnosis and also service better for the human beings. And from the very beginning, it was our aim in order to work in this field, and also it was the target to reach there.
This knowledge-based company began its activities in the field of research. Then it moved on to manufacturing and importing medical lab tech.
By working with very good brands, we were managed to introduce high-quality products, especially in the field of in vitro diagnostic devices and also reagents. And we introduced many big brands into this, into this system. And at that time, I remember there was very few suppliers in this case. But since the technology went through, and also the new platforms have been introduced to the society, the quality of the services also increased, and we were managed to adapt ourselves with the life, and also with the performances of the devices that were offering to the human services.
Among its products, one can name controllers or diagnostic kits for infectious diseases and cancer. Plus, they make lab consumable products such as thinners and substrate liminal, which is a type of chemical that reacts to light as a byproduct. In short, this company has strived to automate manual systems in medical labs. Previously, most processes in labs were carried out by hand. This is both costly and time-consuming, with low output. Having numerous people working on one lab project also increases the margin of error, which is potentially detrimental to the final diagnosis of a patient.
Back then, I remember there was very, very few automatic systems. Everything was done by manual systems. I mean, when you go to the laboratory, you would find out that everything is done totally by manual systems. There has been some employees over there which were working just like shift by shift and process by process until a test has been done. And it was a very, very costly, and also at the same time taking, and also with a very, very low output. The results were not that accurate.
Importing medical products can rack up a mighty bill for labs. Importing processes and clearances can sometimes take months before critical products reach consumers. It's noteworthy that imports cost billions in capital flight. And more often than not, patients are the ones paying the high prices of these imports. With this in mind, many domestic manufacturers have stepped in to fill the market void and reduce dependency on imports. One of the main goals of this company is to indigenize local knowledge and technology by strengthening research and development. It has received its permits from the National Medical Device Directorate and the Ministry of Health and Medical Education.
So, finally speaking, I remember it was the year 2012 or 2013 that we found out some potential suppliers and started drawing out the requirements of what is the requirements of the market, what the customer is looking for, what they want from us, and how we can match their requirements with the potential suppliers, and how we can build this line in order to move this technology and transfer this technology back to Iran. It took a long time because we have got around, if I say correctly, two or three failures. until we found out how we can reach to this technology in order to present it to the society of the laboratory and also diagnostic systems in Iran.
Among its competitive advantages, one can name the low cost of production relative to foreign brands. Additionally, it has access to advanced scientific knowledge and research that already exists within the country. Dependability and accuracy are key components that increase the quality of its products. And manufacturing them with precision and consistent quality is no easy task.
Well, the first thing talks in Iran is the quality. We never sacrifice the quality in comparison with anything else. Despite on pricing, performances, after sales, the quality talks first. Because we're dealing with something which in its platform and its results, the quality is the first thing that talks. If you go to a laboratory and you don't have quality, you have nothing. In other words, in laboratory, the performances and quality and the pricing are the things that go step by step. It means that you first need to have a quality, and then you need to have a performance, and later on you need to have a price. So
this knowledge-based company collaborates with academic institutions and research firms. Plus, it makes its products along the axis of exports, meaning all productions follow stringent national and international standards.
From 2015, everything was totally clear from us. The past was very clear, and we found out that it's a very great opportunity in order to present the system. And officially, by the year 2017, we started launching a very, very fast, reliable platform that was working based on the chemiluminescence. And that platform was totally automatic. I mean, the majority of the process that you could see in the laboratories that has been done by manual back then in 2007, in 2015 was totally automatic. Everything, I mean, from the random access processes, by the assay menus, by the processing the human bloods and also serums, until getting the results and the other things. And it was very, very attractive for me because it was the first time that an Iranian company could manage to present this platform in a very, very reliable way. And it was, unlike the others, it was not, affected by the sanctions that we had.
This company stands on the cusp of exporting its products and has already begun sending samples to European markets. It is also open to cross-border collaborations, particularly with neighboring regions, as most of these nations share many of the same values and domestic demands.
From the very beginning, Iran has the eye of the exporting of the products. And I can say for sure, in comparison with the other international brands, we have got the advantages of the pricing. And if we keep the quality stable, definitely we would be the winner of the game. Definitely the safest way is not going far away. But we are a little bit aggressive in this case, and we started working with some countries in the Europe. We just sent samples over there in order to be performed, in order to be checked, and we also were participating in medical trade shows in order to show that we are also having the capabilities of doing the production, and we are a brand made in Iran, but we are also proud of being in Iran. We do not want to change something, we do not want to be faked. And we want to say that despite having a lot of troubles of sanctions, we are here, we are still alive, and we want to keep going forward.
At the height of the U.S.-imposed sanctions, Noyan was taking big strides in advancing biotechnology products and other knowledge transfers. This company believes that with diligence and ingenuity, it can create exceptional opportunities despite challenges posed by the sanctions.
I do remember when the first sanctions happened, it was just like a shock to the society because everyone was locked. What to do, how to deal with these things, how to transfer the money, and so on. But we learned. We learned how to make the processes much more clear, how to find the balance between the supply and production, how to make the quality stable. I can say for sure, nobody can say the society is not affected by the sanctions. But the point is that we learned and we become strong. There's a saying that whatever doesn't kill you makes you strong. And it definitely makes the Iranian society strong. Because now, in comparison with, I can say 13 years ago, there are at least 100 times manufacturers in this field. And they're trying to upgrade their quality. I do believe it's a beneficial advantage for the Iranian society. Otherwise, if you see that we are going back to the history on 2007, more than 95% of the consumption in the whole area of the laboratory has been imported from the outside. While now, I can say at least 60% has been manufactured, locally, and in comparison with the manufacturers that are located outside, our quality talks.
When the coronavirus broke out, domestic knowledge-based companies led the battle by expanding their production lines. All medicine used to treat COVID-19 have been manufactured domestically so far. This goes to show how the industry is on top of scientific developments. There are roughly 500 medical equipment manufacturers active in the country that produce tens of thousands of products. Here's more on the market.
Iran has a robust industry for producing medical devices. The private sector has invested millions towards manufacturing in this field. The bulk of machine parts, including software, can be developed and engineered by domestic firms. It might be interesting to know the domestic medical device market has grown by 9% since last year. This is while the global average growth was about 6%. That's based on the Office of Medical Equipment at the Ministry of Health. Back in 2018, the National Medical Device Directorate estimated Iran's market in this field was worth nearly $3 billion. The exact figure for this year has not been updated, but it's likely to be much higher. According to the directorate, currently 105 Iranian types of medical equipment and products are exported to 55 countries worldwide, in which your diagnostic kits are at the top of the list with around 30% of the export market. Roughly 500,000 types of medical devices and equipment are made across the globe. Iran is able to domestically manufacture 56% of those available in the world. Important items such as vital sign monitors, operating room monitors, and incubators are among medical devices being exported to Asia-Pacific right now.
Medical devices are not the only products keeping the healthcare industry afloat. Pharmaceutical productions also greatly contribute to this sector. And the pharmaceutical industry is pulsing with new medicines each year. Some 3,000 medicines in thousands of variations are currently produced in Iran. There are some 120 pharmaceutical companies nationwide and around 70 units that specialize in producing raw material needed in this sector.
According to officials, pharmaceutical imports have dramatically dropped by 90% over the years. Domestically produced medicine has helped save the country billions. Iran reduced its currency flight from over $4 billion in 2017 to nearly half that number in 2020. That's going off of statistics from the Food and Drug Administration. Figures from the National Pharmaceutical Syndicate show Iran's domestic pharma market was worth $4.5 billion in 2021. 97% of the pharmaceuticals currently consumed in the country are also domestically produced, making the country nearly self-sufficient in this area.
All right, everyone, it's time for me to step aside for several minutes as my good friend and colleague is about to take you on another educational adventure. Let's go check it out.
Entertainment and recreation are as old as the human history and have changed according to the technological advances of the day. However, the emergence of digital games have come at the cost of detaching us from our real-time interaction with our fellow humankind and led to a sedentary lifestyle. That's where companies like Karoshan step in to bridge that gap by designing and building motor skills equipment for amusement parks. The fledgling company has brought together top specialized experts in the field of children from around the country to design amusement parks that cover all age groups, with a focus on children between the ages of 4 and 12. The equipment made by Karoshan are produced based on the ergonomic and intellectual needs of each age group, both boosting their physical activity and enhancing their mental skills. The entertainment industry is constantly growing, and the Iranian brand says it needs to keep abreast of the latest trends. To this end, it has under its belt a dedicated R&D team that scouts for any new advancement in the field. There's a famous Iranian saying that goes, a healthy mind is a result of a healthy body. And Kar Roshan is trying to materialize the exact same thing. The Iranian brand says at a time when technology is pervading every aspect of our lives, promoting entertainments that enhance our physical activity will build a healthier generation.
We are getting close to the end of our program, but before we go, let's check out some interesting news and trends in this industry and its related trades. If you like trade shows and exhibits, this bit of news is just for you. The capital city of Tehran will be holding a leather exhibition in January dedicated to accessories, shoes, clothing, furniture, and so much more. Nearly 150 companies will be participating in the three-day event. Businesses will be able to showcase their latest products and capabilities in the exhibition. The main purpose is for producers and other industry participants to expand their networks and find new markets. Also, the exhibit is a platform for knowledge transfer as businesses present their latest technical and industrial achievements in this field. Plus, such events offer opportunities for foreign investment, entrepreneurship, and sustainable employment. In Iran, much of the domestically produced leather is used to make shoes, and the industry is booming with massive productions. Presently, Iran can produce around 450 million pairs of shoes annually. That's according to the Iranian Association of Shoe Manufacturers. The sector is now setting a goal to increase yearly productions to 1 billion pairs of shoes in the next few years. The association estimates this would rake in around $6 billion in export revenues. Tehran plans to increase its shoe exports to neighboring regions as well as landlocked Central Asian countries. Market analysts attribute the growth in the domestic shoe industry to ban on shoe imports, which was implemented in 2018. They also argue that the fluctuation in the dollar exchange rate prompted more Iranians to turn to reasonably affordable, domestically produced shoes. And with that, we wrap up our program for today. Thanks for tuning in, stay safe, and I will see you next time.
This is the sentence of Izotso. He's saying that the only thing that I can say is that I feel that as if I am enchanted by Islam.
Besides this, he has a book that is talking about God and human being in the Holy Quran. And some other books that the subject of them are Quranic, you know, concepts and Quranic issues.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
We've wronged ourselves. What will we say in front of it? Mu'allim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio. This is The Teacher. I'm your host, Ata. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Mahdavi and Shaykh Ziyaniya. Shaykh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Shaykh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So in the new series of the program, The Teacher, we are mainly concerned with the scholars, the ulama, the jurists, those researchers who are interested in Islamic studies, most of them are Muslims, and the Shia Muslims, some of them are not Muslims. You know, there are among the non-Muslims who showed interest and dedication to Islamic studies and research on Islamic history. And the teacher is mainly concerned with introducing such dignitaries and scholars all across the world of Islam. For today's discussion, we want to talk about one of those non-Muslim, it's better to say, researchers on the text of the Holy Quran, whose name is Toshihiko Izutsu. The linguist, philosopher, and a researcher of the Holy Quran, originally from Japan, who was born in 1914 in Tokyo. So, Sheikh Ziya, let's start with you, brother. Give us some details about the early life and the background of Toshihiko Izutsu.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Professor Toshihiko Izutsu was born in 4th day of May in 1914 in Tokyo, Japan. And he was professor in Islamic studies plus Arabic language and in philosophy and also in Eastern religions. He was born in a wealthy family and his father was a wealthy man. And beside being wealthy, his father was strict Buddhist.
Okay.
So he was trying to, you know, bring up his son, a person who is firm Buddhist, and as a person who, you know, believes in Buddhism deep in his heart. So because of that, Izutsu was tolerating and suffering from some sort of asceticism during his young age.
Okay.
And because of this, he was not, you know, that much satisfied with Buddhism.
Okay.
That's why he decides to study about different religions in his young age. And beside that, he didn't like, you know, studying economic. He started studying economic.
Yes.
But after all, he changed his major and started learning Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's famous that he learned about 30 languages, from which he was fluent in at least 17 languages. He
really?
Was understanding and writing and reading in these languages, amongst which was Persian, was Arabic, was many different languages, English. So Izutsu dedicated his life in studying language, and beside that, he was interested in different religions and philosophy. That's why he moved to Montreal and taught there. And in Montreal, he got familiar with Professor Muhaqqiq, a person who made Izutsu familiar with Iran. And from that moment on, Izutsu had many travels to Iran. After all, he even stayed about 7 years, 6 years in Iran.
Okay.
And he left Iran in 1978. I want to add a point here that you mentioned Izutsu was not a Muslim. It's famous that he was not a Muslim.
Yes.
But the director of a documentary about Izutsu that is made in Iran, the name is The Eastern.
Yes.
The director says that it's famous that Izutsu was not a Muslim, but I do believe that according to the documents that he has collected during, the work that he had done, he believes that Izutsu was converted into Islam and was a Muslim.
As Sheikh Ziya mentioned, you know, most of his researchers were regarding Islamic studies, especially Islamic philosophy, Islamic hikmah, and Islamic mysticism. Of course, the people who come from Japan, originally somehow in their sectarian beliefs, have such trainings, I mean, mystical, ascetic, we can say, teachings in the Eastern traditions, and that's why they believe in such spiritual trainings and movements, and nowadays we can find it too. But what made Izutsu interested in Islamic philosophy, Irfan, and Hikmah?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is a very nice question. Why I'm saying that this is a very nice question, because as you mentioned, this is something typical that most of the time when we look at the history of the people who are coming from the East, because of the environment they grew in, they have this tendency upon Irfan, asceticism, mysticism, things which has something to do with the spiritual aspect of the life.
Yes.
This is something which is typical. But what made the scholar like Izotso to be interested in Islamic version of spirituality? That's why this is a nice question to know about it.
Yes.
So I think this is good to ask this question from the very person, Izotso.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he was asked this question. Mm-hmm. Why? Because he had produced a lot of works in terms of Islamic philosophy, Islamic mysticism. So this is very strange. What made you to get interested in Islam? Because we have different versions of spirituality here and there, in the West or East.
Yes.
But what made you to get interested in Islamic version of it? And in response, he says that, I can't say anything. And my interest upon Islamic philosophy and Islamic mysticism is a kind of mysterious interest. Even within myself, I cannot understand why I am interested. The only thing that I can say, this is the sentence of Izotso,
okay,
is saying that the only thing that I can say is that I feel that as if I am enchanted by Islam.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this could be considered as a complementary point, or we may say supplementary point, for what our brother Sheikh Diyaniya mentioned, that
yes,
the director of that documentary believes that he had converted. We don't know what happened in reality,
yes,
but this is something which is quoted,
yes,
from Izotso, and I think it helps us,
yes,
a lot in this regard.
This documentary is called Sharqi in Farsi,
yeah,
which roughly can be translated from East or Eastern, you know. It was directed and produced and written by Masoud Tahiri. It is about the life of Izotso. But Sheikh Ziyaniya, one of the other main interests of Izotso was the Holy Quran. What details can you give us about his research methodology about the Holy Quran?
Okay, you know, because Quran is the main text in the religion of Islam, that's why every person who wants to work in Islamic studies automatically is pushed toward the Holy Quran.
Yes.
So Izotso was not an exception regarding this. And he started translating the Holy Quran from Arabic into Japanese. And that was the first time that this process was done by a Japanese person. Of course, he was not the last. We talked that previously that Professor Sawada also,
yes,
translated Quran from Arabic into Japanese. But Izotso is the first person,
mm-hmm,
who tries this.
Yes.
And he translated the Holy Quran in 3 volumes into Japanese. And he had some theories regarding this, of course, because it's a technical discussion, so I do not want to go into the details. But he has a theory regarding the translation of the Quran. He has some books regarding this. He has a theory regarding the semantic of the words of the Holy Quran, how to translate them, how to, you know, get closer to the concepts of the words. Of course, he do believes that some of the words in every language, as he says this, that some of the words in every language are not translatable.
Mm-hmm.
You are not able to translate these words.
Yes.
But he gives some ways to get closer to the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Besides this, he has a book that is talking about God and human being in the Holy Quran.
Mm-hmm.
And some other books that the subject of them are Quranic, you know, concepts and Quranic issues. That shows that he was maybe absorbed by the teachings of the Holy Quran. And he dedicated at least some years of his life.
That's
and
right.
Let me say the ending part of his life,
mm-hmm,
for researching and writing and working about Islamic studies. And it's interesting that when he returns from Iran to Japan in 1978, he tries to work and write his books in Japanese, not in English.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that I want to transfer these teachings into Japanese language because I do believe that these, you know, ideas are needed in Japanese language.
Mm-hmm.
So he does not writing his books in
English.
That's right. On that part of his life. Before that, he had some works in English,
mm-hmm,
but at the ending part of his life, he tries to write the books in Japanese. And we should know that the ending moments of his life was like this, that he fell down in his house,
mm-hmm,
he got a strike, and he thought that it's not something serious.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was a brain bleeding.
Yes.
But he was not aware of that. That's why he told his wife that I'm going to have some sleep and rest.
Okay.
And he slept and never woke up again in this world. But we ask Almighty God to send blessings
yes.
to his soul, because he dedicated much of his time regarding Quran and Islamic studies.
Sure.
And he is valuable in this regard. And